Welcome, welcome, welcome to the best part of your week. This is Mike, Mike, and Oscar, and we told you that there was changes on the horizon. Something new was coming up. This is our first run. It's our, I guess, test run is what we're going to call it, of a new weekly show we're going to call MMO Weekly. It's going to be kind of a news roundup, week in review, week in preview type deal. Mm-hmm. We're going to have different segments rotating throughout. We're not sure if this is going to be a Sunday release or a Monday release yet, but for this test trial run, we're going to release it, obviously, on Sunday morning, see how it goes, see how it plays, and next time you hear it, hopefully it'll be a little more polished with a little more glitz and glam attached to it. But this is the first episode of MMO Weekly. Welcome to it. I am co-host Mike One. This is co-host also Mike.
Also Mike here. Award season is ramping up. Yes. We are like going up the roller coaster now. Click, 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 click. The news is going to be flying.
That's right.
You know, it's going to be coming fast and furious basically every weekend, and with the nominations, with award shows. So this gives us an outlet to kind of cover it as it hits. This gives us an outlet to hit on news stories on a weekly basis, of course, but also that big trailer that comes out. And we're going to comment on the box office. We're going to get more interactive with some predictions. And instead of doing things kind of on a monthly basis, and those episodes have done well for us, but I think if we keep you tuned in on a weekly basis, you know, you guys, the whole culture, you, all you millennials, you're like...
That's not even the right word.
Millennials. All you millennials. I'm so old. Or basically, you want what you want and you want it now, so we give it to you.
Yeah, and that's pretty much the long and the short of why we're doing this. We want to be more interactive with you guys. We want to be more up to date. We feel like with the website coming, which is, I swear to God, it's coming. We have hit so many freaking roadblocks with this website because we are just two of the least
cavemen,
technologically inclined cavemen people, but it's being worked on.
You remember
currently
the beginning of 2001?
Yeah, basically.
Mike's got the bone right now.
Essentially,
I had the bone for a while. He bashed me over the head with it, rightfully so. Mike's got the bone now.
But we're trying to, we've divided our catalog on SoundCloud into different playlists. We're trying to divide everything into a much more nice, neat, efficient package for you guys to kind of sort through for our content. And part of that evolution is having these single shot, once a week episodes that you can kind of know as a go-to place for news, updates, information, everything that happened last week, and to get you ready for the week to come. So with that, how the show is going to work, we're going to have pretty much, what do you think, like 12, 14 segments?
We've been having so much fun thinking of all these rotating segments. Yeah. And the reason we do a rotation is that depends on what's timely that week. So if we have a new trailer, we'll cover the new trailer. If we have a big box office, we'll cover the big box office. If we have an Oscar update, which we will hear today, we'll cover that. And if we have something weird, we'll cover something weird. If we're just feeling weird and squirrely, we'll cover that too.
That never happens. So, yeah, and like we said, this is a test run for this. Whether if it works on Sunday morning, we'll keep it on Sunday mornings. If it's better playing on Saturday or Monday, exactly. We're going to respond to what you guys have. And
pre-Sunday brunch, do you want your movie chatter or on your way to work Monday morning, not thinking about the week you have in front of you? Do you want that
news? And hopefully the next time we do come to you, we'll have a theme song all worked out. We'll have some drops.
He played me all these drops. I loved each and every one of them. I was so afraid.
They are insane.
Because what if I didn't like them? He was touting them all last night.
Yes.
A million texts. Wait till you see what I did. I actually sang, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I was so scared. It was like somebody showing me their screenplay. I was terrified.
We're recording this on Saturday, November 10th. I spent all of the 9th basically locked away in my Dr. Dre type studio.
You were Dr. Dre?
Yeah.
You're the defiant one.
Thank you. All right. So let's start off going a little different route. Instead of just leading off with movies for a change, this gives us a chance to talk to you guys and tell you what we've actually been watching for fun when we actually have a moment to breathe, as opposed to doing all movie reviews all the time. So Mike, what have you been watching lately for fun?
I want to point out a couple movies on Netflix because they've been hitting like the big ones that were touted to come this fall. They'll Love Me When I'm Dead, The Other Side of the Wind, the two Orson Welles movies, then Film Worker and Outlaw King. Those are all dropped the last week and a half. Let me start with They'll Love Me When I'm Dead. Morgan Neville is becoming one of my favorite documentary filmmakers, Mike.
Yeah, you have high things to say about him.
From Won't You Be My Neighbor to 20 Feet from Stardom. I love both of those. He is really a maestro with documentary story structure. And he's got this genre down pat, these show business docs. And I loved They'll Love Me When I'm Dead. I watched it before.
Okay.
The Other Side of the Wind. Now it's kind of a mixture between a bio of Orson Welles and then a making of The Other Side of the Wind. This was a little bit
interesting.
little bit confusing in the sense that they made The Other Side of the Wind look great, right?
Oh, okay.
And I was all hyped up. Again, expectations. It's a right. game of expectations movie watching. Sweet. If there's one thesis statement from MMO, take that to heart because that's why you listened to us in the first place.
Yeah, and that had a huge impact on your enjoyment of the movie Overlord.
Hated yeah. The Other Side of the Wind.
All right.
It was unwatchable. It's just a smattering. There's literally scenes in there like the shot is lost.
Which is kind of what we expected, right? We've been touting the whole time that The Other Side of the Wind, this hidden Orson Welles property that's going to be released in 2018,
and just,
there's probably a reason it wasn't released in the 50s
gross.
Or 60s.
It's like this porno thing, like because Welles, they covered it in the Love Me When I'm Dead. He like did like all these softcore porno shoots under a stage name, and then he does this movie with his girlfriend, who's also kind of like, I don't know, she's like a modern art person.
Well, everybody needs a hobby.
So they're naked the whole movie, so if there's that, but it's aggravating because it's really dumb movie. And then there's
so you got all kinds of penis in your movie watching recently, huh?
I've watched a lot of penis
all right,
lately.
Good for you.
But there's also like all directors like Bogdanovich, John Huston can act, but all these other directors can't act for shit.
Really?
They're terrible.
Okay.
And it's just like Orson Welles is making this movie with all his buddies, but I'm just like dying inside every time Peter Bogdanovich drops a line. I just can't.
Yeah, I gotta be honest. I didn't, first of all, I haven't seen many glowing reviews about it. Not that I've seen any reviews much at all about it, but I haven't been compelled to want to see it myself.
Do not see it.
Yeah, I was probably gonna avoid it anyway, but now I don't see any reason for me to take the dive.
Now, I watched Outlaw King, speaking of penis. I beat you to the penis.
Yeah, you did.
I beat you to the penis.
All right.
It delivered some serious goods, a package of goods, if you will. No, okay.
Very good.
It took my breath away in a few sequences. This is getting worse. Okay, here, the violence. Let's maybe talk about the violence, something macho. Straight up crazy intense. There's a final battle that just blew me away. Just really terrific stuff. I mean, the size and scope of it's great. But there's also a lot of awesome politicking going on. There's Machiavellian politics with all Stephen Delane as the king.
Yeah.
This is a sequel to Braveheart. It is the sequel that I've been wanting in a way. Because
so
it does...
filled your expectation. Now, do you think your movie, speaking of how expectations tie in, do you think your enjoyment of Outlaw King was enhanced because you kind of had that lull? Like, expectations were when people got their hands on this originally, it was like, eh.
It is so gross in some scenes.
Oh,
like, there
okay.
are gross executions, and the British are brutal, and the violence is brutal. So you have to be ready for that.
Okay.
I would say, again, managing expectations is the key here. But if you're looking for a war movie that delivers some goods, I mean, this really does it. And I like the whole – I was swept up in the epic nature of the conflict. I wanted to see where it went. It's just an epilogue at the end of Braveheart. You know, it's the end of Braveheart, and then there's the epilogue of the final battles and how they win the war there. This is how it was done, and – there's some serious dilemmas and drama. And like I said, I was floored by a couple scenes. And it wasn't just the big battles. There's a lot of the intrigue going on. I like all the politics. And the cast did a terrific job. I'm on team Chris Pine. I'm on team Florence Pugh. They are great actors. Stephen Delane.
I've actually seen a lot of positive reviews from Outlaw King, which is the exact opposite of what we saw when it was hitting critics to begin with. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what to think about this movie. I'm still, the melodramas and the overdone war epics that are, you know, period pieces, I still have issue with just as a genre. But currently sits at 57% on Rotten Tomatoes. That's a rotten score, average 6 out of 10 on 93 critic reviews. But you say it's better than that. It's worth seeing.
I think it's a B movie. I mean,
okay.
It's like an 84 for me,
cool.
if I'm going to give it a grade,
awesome.
But I'm solid on it. So the other movie that really touched my heart, and it's got a hugely high grade, a B+ 88 for me, is Film Worker. This is
we were excited about this
Stanley
one.
Stanley Kubrick, kind of his fixer, his one of his
made man.
His do-everything assistants, yeah. Leon. What a great story about this guy. This is catnip for Kubrick junkies, which I am.
Sure. I think anyone that does anything about film has to be, right?
You know, you admire his workaholic tendencies, but what a heroic effort. Every film and every sequence that he put forth, both modern times and back when he's doing like the making of segments on whatever film, just heroic, Herculean effort. And you just got to admire that kind of effort. You can't teach heart.
Does it get into the darker side of Kubrick that we've all kind of been told about?
They hint at a lot of it. It's kind of like Won't You Be My Neighbor in the sense that, you know, some of the negatives are kind of pushed under the rug a little
right.
bit. But because it's That's like the side subject.
Okay.
Kubrick. It's focused on Leon and his part in it. They kind of discuss his psychology and how you got to be in dealing with these auteurs. But talk about unsung heroes. And it's constant in the film industry. There's so many of these guys and girls who are just from film to film enabling these monoliths, these great filmmakers, these auteurs.
Sure.
For them to get their filmography out there, they need an army,
right,
of sergeants like this guy. And I'm just in awe of his contribution, both before Kubrick's death and then after Kubrick's death, to restore all of his work and how he worked tirelessly for
right.
the studios to get all that stuff enhanced. Like, nobody can do it but him.
Ugh.
It's unbelievable what this guy did. So I love that movie. Go watch it on Netflix. If you're a film fan.
I definitely want to check that up without question. I was excited when we first previewed it, and I'd have to get on it. I haven't.
This might be a nerd love for me. It might be a nerdy thing that I'm just a film
junkie. Nah, I've seen some good stuff. It seems to be general consensus, but I'm glad that you yourself, being a screenwriter and having experience on set and with the camera yourself, what goes into making a film, I'm sure you appreciate it even more so.
If you've been on set and you've done like a 14-hour day or a 16-hour day, and especially in an assistant role, which I have, and I've been on a couple productions, the days feel like they're so long, you get so punchy, but you're just working, and this guy's doing that for months on end.
Oh, God bless him.
It's unbelievable. And he's doing above the line stuff. It's not just below the line stuff.
Oh, cool.
And he had a phenomenal acting career that he gave up to basically just be a cult follower of Stanley Kubrick.
That's the craziest part of all of this.
Right.
That he dedicated his life to a man, essentially.
It's like he had his star-making role. Like, what was the guy from Straight Outta Compton? Jason Mitchell.
Yeah.
It's like Jason Mitchell, star-making role. And then he just becomes Ryan Coogler's
main guy. Right, exactly.
Or he becomes, a director.
Like when one guy does it,
he's a personal assistant.
He's a dedicated assistant, but if three people did it, it's the beginning of a cult.
Right.
You know?
Unbelievable.
It's such a fine line.
It's a wonderful story. He found a lot of Kubrick's most notable actors, some performances that really worked.
Amazing.
In some big movies. This guy was the guy to find them and then coach them, like be their acting coach. Oh, God, I loved it.
I have to check that out. That's a really good hype job by you. So, well, Film Worker, we're in for, according to Also Mike. Outlaw King, surprisingly, we're still in for, according to Also Mike.
I liked them.
All right. Good enough to know.
Call him like I see him.
I've done much less prestigious film watching, which shouldn't be a shock to you or anybody. College Humor has been a huge part of my life for years and years and years, way back to the Jake and Amir days. Sam Reich is kind of the guy that took control of their video product there. They have a new subscription service, streaming service online called Dropout, and I'm a sucker for it. I am, like, my brother was a hardcore, like, fantasy role-playing games type guy growing up. Shmave, we've talked about. I've always busted
his
balls
for it. He's got the beard for it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's Gimli from Lord of the Rings, essentially. I've always busted his balls about it. But they have this tabletop show about a live action, essentially a Dungeons & Dragons game, except it's not Dungeons & Dragons. It takes place at like this, it's the setting of a high school, except it's a magical high school. It's called Fantasy High, Dimension 20. These episodes are like 2 hours at a time. I signed up for Dropout specifically because it's such a good job of storytelling, and I am so just obsessed with what is happening next. I have Brendan Lee Mulligan as the game master. I have screamed at him on Twitter. I'm like, how dare you only put out 7 episodes to start? I need more. I need my fix. They finally dropped episode 8. I have been just binging that nonsense.
Wow.
And it has been so fulfilling for me. It scratched an itch that I didn't even know I had, and I need to apologize for making fun of all the Dungeons & Dragons game masters and all the people that I thought were a little too nerdy for my tasting, because this is fascinating. The highlight of it all is that this Brendan Lee Mulligan, he's called the Game Master. There's six of his coworkers are playing this game, and he is basically, he has pillars of the story that he has to tell, but he is making up this lush story on whims of what the characters decide to do throughout 2 hours. There's like 16 or 14 hours of content out there right now. I'm obsessed with it.
So there are improvisational geniuses.
Exactly.
What you're
saying. More or less, and they are, I mean, they're all comedians. They are writers for College Humor themselves that
Got
do
it.
This. So they're used to having to make up stuff on the spot like that, but it's just, oh man, I love it. Give that the Oscar, I say.
Well, that's great. Yeah, I mean, we need better content on the internet in terms of like narrative content, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, streaming, obviously Netflix, but they're buying stuff. They got billions to work with. We need like that next crop of content producers to take the stage, and that's awesome. So I also, I just keep thinking of your brother dressed up in full Gimli attire, and then his voice comes out like Peter Griffin's older brother, which you are Peter Griffin.
Yes.
And then he just...
Yeah. We actually, when he gets mad, we always called him Edith Bunker, because he hits that, Archie! That high pitch that's really, he's going to yell at me for that, for telling everyone. But yes, I refer to him every time I introduce, I talk about him to someone who doesn't know him. I have to lead off with, you know Gimli, you know the red, the troll from Lord of the Rings? It's that guy without the hammer.
It's not a troll, it's a dwarf.
I'm sorry, yes.
Excuse you.
I'm sorry.
Excuse you.
I'm still, you can tell I'm still getting my nerd feet wet with my experience with Fantasy High. But Dimension 20 Fantasy High, dropout from College Humor. Well worth the money. All their shorts are out there. They have like a decade's worth of content that they put out on YouTube awesome. Over the years.
You send me some Jake and Amir stuff, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
I
they rolled off my their ass own thing from HeadGum. Night. HeadGum's hilarious in and of its own right. Yeah, it's great. So that's what we've been watching, and that's why we wanted to include that segment, because otherwise we wouldn't have an opportunity to kind of talk about this stuff that we enjoy on our own time. Let's keep it rolling forward into the big news story of the week. That'll be our next segment here, and again, once we have a polished version of the show, we'll have ridiculous drops to let you know that what segment is coming next.
Yes, I'll just, for today, I'll just go, breaking news!
Thank you.
That won't be the drop going forward, but...
Oh, it is now.
Oh, no.
Big news story of the week, heartbreaking story. It's all over Aubrey Entertainment page.
I used the wrong tone in my singing.
Right. This wildfire out in California is just heartbreaking to watch.
Yeah, this sucks. A lot of property damage, fatalities we're seeing on the Hollywood Reporter here. So you know it's a big deal when the trades are covering it like crazy. The Hollywood Reporter and Variety, of course. So the L.A. County Sheriff Department Chief John Benedict said on Saturday that areas including Calabasas, Agoura Hills, and Malibu were under evacuation orders. This is 33,000 blocks of Mulholland Drive where they're fighting this thing.
Good God. There's so many people attached that have been evacuated. Joe Rogan, obviously one of the biggest podcasters out there, has had to cancel shows. And
70,000 acres.
Had to evacuate his home. He's basically living out of his studio, he said, right now. There's been news stories. Again, all you got to do is go on the Hollywood Reporter site. The Bachelor Mansion is on fire. One of the Westworld sets has been burned down. There's so many people that Guillermo del Toro, my God, this is not Hollywood Reporter, but Guillermo del Toro had to evacuate. I think it was actually Scott Feinberg who highlighted this on Twitter for me yesterday. Guillermo del Toro had to evacuate his house, and his house is essentially a museum to horror artifacts and cinematic artifacts. And he does. You just don't know if you're going to have those things through and replace them. It's just the heart, the videos, the photos. It looks like an apocalyptic land out there. It's just awful.
Like this is the end of this is the end there.
Exactly.
That's
so
very sad.
We wanted to highlight for you guys, the Entertainment Industry Foundation did set up a website page, Urgent Need, Immediate Impact, Music for Relief, that you can donate here. They go to helping out the firefighters that are tasked with fighting this blaze, which just seems never ending. It's at eifoundation.org. All you got to do, the website, https://secure.eifoundation.org. It's going to bring you to the page to make a donation. It's EIF's Fire Relief Fund.
Yeah.
They're fighting this fire together. There's an employment matching gift on there. You can do whatever you can, anything you can donate to help these people.
And they're helping the people who need it. You know, Guillermo del Toro's got his collection insured. These Hollywood studios have insurance. I mean, there's a couple fatalities today. We saw two fatalities. Again, 70,000 acres, 33,000 blocks on Mulholland Drive. They're going to help out the people that need to be helped out. It's all written there. It's all on the website. So do donate if you can, and certainly follow along with this story. And thoughts and prayers and are with those folks out there on the West Coast.
It's so surreal. I mean, obviously we take the Hollywood lens on it, and it's tough to separate the two, and we know a couple people out that way. It's so frightening. I mean, we can't possibly relate. You see, like, Martin Sheen, he needing to be located by the local news because Charlie Sheen called up and couldn't find his father, and they finally found him, and it's just harrowing, absolutely harrowing. So please, if you can donate, please do. Think about donating. If you can donate your time or services or anything, think about doing that.
The industry has one hell of a microphone. They have a platform, obviously. So hopefully that awareness can spread, and they can get this problem solved, because this has been hitting a lot of places on the West Coast, a lot of acreage on the West Coast for years. That movie Only the Brave, you know, if you see that movie, you get a smidgen of what this is and how dangerous all this is, and all these heroes, you know, fighting these fires. I can't get over, you know, that amount of
I can't even imagine the heart. I mean, God bless all. I hope you all stay safe. Hope your loved ones make it out. I hope those things that are nearest and dearest to you survive, but just please stay safe. And you know, we talk about all the time how thoughts and prayers are basically meaningless and empty gestures, but we want to donate and you are in our thoughts and prayers. You're at the forefront of us. If there is more we can do, we would love to, and just stay safe, please.
Absolutely.
So it's a terrible, terrible story to have as our leading news story of the week. So we're going to try to pivot. We had to highlight that it is having such an impact in the world of movies and TV and music as well. Pivoting out of that and trying to make it a little more lighthearted, a little more fun for the weekly show here, we're going to recap, finally, our long-awaited, long-anticipated 6 Degrees of MMO challenge that we laid out, a month ago at this point?
It's probably 3.5 weeks, four weeks, yeah. But we knew we were planning MMO weekly,
yes.
And now we kind of can do it more on a weekly basis, we think, we hope. So we're going to do more interactive things. We've been having a few ideas in the idea bubbles from our comic book heads that we'll have for you down the line. But right now, the 6 Degrees of MMO, you're having fun with it, we're having fun with it. Mike, you have the round four winners of Jamie Lee Curtis to Mike Myers. This was our Halloween themed challenge. It was round number four because we reviewed the entire Halloween franchise leading up to the David Gordon Green movie. That was 8 pods worth of content. We had a ton of fun with that as well. Go back and listen to that. And here we go, Mike.
Yeah, you guys don't make this easy.
This is hard. We're going to read a bunch.
We ask for your creativity, and you guys certainly bring it. The one that struck me, there was two out there. I guess I'll call them both winners. The one that struck me, a podcast about something at APA something. Jamie Lee Curtis, Freaky Friday with Lindsay Lohan.
Mm-hmm.
We all saw that when we were teenagers, whether it was against our will or not.
Or as adults.
And still, yes, as 30-something-year-old men.
I watched it last night. No,
Lindsay Lohan was in Mean Girls with Tina Fey. A lot of people tried to go the Mean Girls route as well. Tina Fey was in Anchorman 2 with Will Ferrell showing up in the big news fight, which was a classic scene where she showed up with Amy Poehler, and Will Smith had a part in that. And Will Ferrell, of course, was in Austin Powers with Michael Myers. Kind of an antibacterial ointment.
This is 4 for 4 right now with the movies. Yes.
So that is the chain. Jamie Lee Curtis, Freaky Friday with Lindsay Lohan, who was in Mean Girls with Tina Fey, who was in Anchorman 2 with Will Ferrell, who was in Austin Powers with Michael Myers.
I like how they went two actresses that have done horror and comedy, and then two just straight up SNL comedians.
And some cult, just cult classic, the SNL type
Mean Girls
movies
is an all-timer, yeah.
I love it. Right. Lorne Michaels, he's got a future in this business, I think.
He just might. He's got a puncher's chance.
H.A. Simpson had another one, and I thought this one was really creative.
Yes.
This goes around the world in a single movie. And I really love that. At Squeaky, HASQUEAKYHA, Jamie Lee was in Trading Places with Eddie Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie Murphy voiced the donkey in Shrek. Shrek was voiced by Mike Myers, who was on SNL with Dan Aykroyd, who was in Trading Places with Jamie Lee Curtis.
That's like the palindrome of 6 Degrees.
It's going from Connecticut to Connecticut, but passing through Oregon first.
Yes.
You know?
And it's like the level that's a palindrome. Yeah. The perfect level of
I love that.
Degrees.
It's going not only 360 degrees around, but it goes, you know, let's just go 500 degrees and just see what happens. Jamie Lee Curtis, Trading Places with Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy was the donkey in Shrek. Shrek was voiced by Mike Myers, who was on SNL with Dan Aykroyd. And Aykroyd was in Trading Places as well. We have movie, TV, the same movie. I thought that was super, super creative. Congrats and bragging rights to the two winners this month. A podcast about something at APA something SOMETHING and at Squeaky HASQUEAKYHA. That's H.A. Simpson. Congratulations. The bragging rights for this month or this week or this round are yours. You can enjoy them. And Michael, we do have, of course, a follow-up challenge and round, 5, I think now, for the 6 Degrees of MMO challenge. Let's announce that before we go through a couple more entries from this past round. What do we have?
So we just hit pause and came up with a doozy for you folks. Congratulations, Mike won. This is all you, baby.
This is the proudest I've ever been of myself.
You should be proud.
I passed the bar. I got a college education. No. This is it.
This is the zenith.
Yes, this is the mountaintop for me.
Steve McQueen from Bullet.
Yes.
The Thomas Crown Affair.
Very famous action star. The Chuck Bronson type out there.
All the way to Steve McQueen, director of Shame, 12 Years a Slave, and The Upcoming Widow. So Steve McQueen to Steve McQueen, round five, get hyped, ring the bell, baby. Let's do this.
Steve McQueen-ception, I think is what we're going to title this. Yes. So going from the actor of the 70s and 80s, Steve McQueen, to the director who actually... I thought was the director of 12 Years a Slave back in 2012 before I realized there was a different Steve McQueen. Points to me for that idiocy.
And if you come up with a palindromic, which I think is the next subtitle of the next Cloverfield movie, Cloverfield Palindromic.
Cloverfield
if you come
palindrome.
Up with a palindromic version of going from the original Steve McQueen to the director back to the original again, then our faces will melt like the end of Indiana Jones.
Exactly. That's true.
That's a great job, Mike. One, and that's a hell of a challenge.
And be creative as always. You know, don't stick to just movies. If you could find something in these guys' back. Stories that you can you know confirm happened. If you can go through different actors, different videos, different TV shows, video games, if that's possible, go ahead, do it. We love seeing it. It's for you guys to flex your creative muscles, and we just sit back and laugh. And like always, we'll shamelessly pick our winners subjectively and just suggest that we're
winners. All right, so that's a great job this week, folks, or this month. And let's get back to this one a little quicker this time, Mike.
Yeah, we should Challenge do that five. Like a weekly thing, I think.
It might be. I guess we just got to come up with a format for the show.
We're on the verge here, I think. Some other ones from this round that we just wanted to highlight. Paul Mitchell at Gaston Grimsdyke. That's at GastonGrimsdyke. MSDYKE, Jamie Lee Curtis, was in Trading Places again with Eddie Murphy, who starred as Donkey in Trek with Mike Myers. He cut off, you see. He stopped the circle where it was supposed to stop. Right. He didn't go around the world again for the second time, so he had that one as well. Nice job. Our friends at Dare Daniel Movie Podcast, Jamie Lee Curtis and Travolta were in Perfect. Travolta and Danny DeVito were in Get Shorty. DeVito and Myers were in Austin Powers 3.
Yep.
What was Danny DeVito in Austin Powers 3?
Oh, he was Mini-Me. He was the parody of Mini-Me.
Yes.
So, that's terrific. Great job. Ben Miller at Neb is Ben, NebIsBen. He said Jamie Lee Curtis was in You Again with Odette Annabelle. Deep cut. She was in a 2006 episode of Brothers and Sisters. Deeper cut. Sharp Objects. Deeper cut. Called Thanks for the Memory, shot by Mike Myers, excuse me. Yeah. Oh my God.
He's going just synonyms. I love it.
That same episode featured Sally Field. She hosted SNL with Mike Myers.
Yes. Great job, but Neb is Ben. We love the tangential relationship, really having nothing to do with one another, but you put that through line out there. You deserve a Lynchian-like award. Good for you
for having
the subtext and meaning in that. That's the round of 6 degrees of MMO. Thank you guys very, very much. As always, Steve McQueen, actor to Steve McQueen, director, is your latest round. We're going to put that out on social media, as we always do. Looking forward to this creativity that you guys have, and you never fail to disappoint. And this has been one of the highlights of the podcast for us, is seeing you guys interact and put out everything you can. So great job as always, and let's see it again. All right, moving on. Next segment we're going to do is box office stats. If we have stuff to talk about box office worthy or box office the money wise and some surprises that rang in, we're going to highlight those as we have this year. And us having just done the Overlord movie event review we released that for listening on Friday.
Our horse in the race kind of lost to a greener horse, I would say.
Can the Grinch become a horse? Or am I thinking of nothing?
You're thinking of nothing.
Okay, good. Very good.
My brain stop working?
Let's do a box office recap for some of the Thursday, Friday preview numbers and the projections there, too. Michael, what do we have?
So the Grinch made $2.2 million on Thursday night previews, along with another $18.7 million Friday night. $63 to $65 million was the original projection. It is now gross $67 million, Michael, at the moment on a new projection.
What is happening here? Is there that much of a fertile ground for a new Grinch movie? Are people dying to get in the Christmas spirit?
It rained on the East Coast. It rained pretty hard.
Maybe
more kids went to the movies last night. They didn't want to be stuck in the house with those little kids, the parents. And Under Pressure was probably in the soundtrack. So the parents are like, let's go see it.
Call back to a Bohemian Rhapsody. Itself did well at the box office this weekend. It's climbing towards $100 million domestically. But The Grinch, 54% on Rotten Tomatoes, 105 critical reviews, 57 fresh, average score 5.9, audience score is only a 74.
Right.
It's not killing numbers. And kind of the opposite of the tomato meter is kind of what's been highlighted. As I said, Bohemian Rhapsody is killing it at the box office, on its way to $100 million domestically as well. It's not getting love from the tomato meter, but don't live your life by the tomato meter.
Overlord made $900K Thursday night. Couple of those dollars.
You're welcome.
From us. Another $4 million on Friday. It's on pace to go like $10 million in that first projection. And I think as of now, it is topped off at $10 million.
Yeah, that seems to be a number. It's probably going to end up losing money, you would think, in that kind of... Again, the post-hype for that one is kind of what killed it. Fantastic Fest, people loved it when it first came out, when they first saw it. It got huge tomato meter numbers.
And doesn't it have to make numbers. $100 million off a $38
million budget?
$38
million budget to there, make yeah. money. So it's probably going to be a loser. $10 million, you think that's maybe going to be something we'll talk about, get a little more into those numbers in just a second. We'll top off the weekend. Girl in the Spider's Web, the surprising loser. I don't think there's much of a market for this anymore in this day and age.
$3 million on Friday, and it looks like a domestic launch of 8 to 8.5 million for the weekend. That is a flop.
Even bigger budget. $43 million to make that a production budget for that one.
Yeah, that is a flop.
25 films at this point in 2018 have grossed between 8 and 15 million in their opening weekend. So obviously we're excluding The Grinch for this one. We'll touch on that in a second. Just talking about Overlord and Girl in the Spiderwebs and their chance to recoup the low domestic box office rake amongst those that opened between 8 and 15 million in their opening weekend is the barely over $20 million made by Proud Mary and the Happy Time Murders. That's probably what Girl in the Spider's Web is looking at for a total rake.
Right.
So it's going to not even make half its production budget back.
Come up way short.
That franchise is dead, yes?
Probably dead, and it makes sense because the first one wasn't a huge box office success.
You highlighted it. The Stieg Larsson ones are the ones people have kind of anticipation and excitement to see adapted into film.
Right.
The Lagercrantz one seemed to be suffering a little momentum.
It was done well by Niels Arden Oplev. He did those with Noomi Rapace. Those are solid movies. That was the first experience I had with The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. I remember seeing that, not knowing anything about it.
Oh, so you went into the movie
totally
before even seeing the...
floored me, before reading, yeah. Huh? And then I read all three books. Like, I went on a deep dive.
Now, those are the Larsson ones, though, right?
Stieg Larsson, yeah. And I read all three books and mowed those down. That was a epic obsession, binge read and binge watch, because I had all the Swedish TV to go after as well. The miniseries was very engaging. They made the David Fincher movie, mm-hmm. which was solid. I thought it's very good upon rewatch. It's one of those movies that gets under your skin, as all David Fincher films do. So it's kind of worthwhile. Like, I didn't love it the first time I saw it. It's very tough. The movie's brutally violent.
Craig, Rooney Mara, though, there, the two there. I also credit that. The studio, I think, mishandled this property because that came out in, what, 2011?
Right.
Why the 7-year gap between movies here?
It's a shame because it's a hell of a character. It's a hell of a feminist hero.
Sure.
And Claire Foy is a rising star. That is a shame that they couldn't bring this one home. Like Keith Stanfield, someone we really love.
Yeah, right. Great cast. Of the moment. Ryan C. Showers of Next Best Picture, him and I kind of got into it. He seemed to lose it a little bit late last night on Twitter, saying that he can't stand the love that Claire Foy is getting, saying that she's seeing her as a shoo-in for the Best Supporting Actress Oscar doesn't make sense. She's flopped as the lead of this one. First Man is going to lose a lot of money some decent points.
Yeah, Ryan's a good critic out there. He does a lot of good stuff, and we've been enjoying talking to him on film Twitter. We have these spats from now and again with our friends, and I would agree with you that Claire Foy is one of my favorite Best Supporting Actresses so far in First Man.
That was my argument as well. Go back to our review. It's a money loser. I think it's a great performance.
I saw a great performance in that movie and so much subtext with what she's pulling off there.
Yeah, the decisions made by those two, herself and Gosling as the lead actor, we saw as deliberate decisions to play reserved or play over the top. Other people didn't, and that's the beauty of film criticism, and we'll see how it shakes out at the end. Overlord still has some momentum going back to the box office numbers, but it looks like it's going to be a money loser as well. No film opening between 10 and 12 million this year has been able to do more gross-wise than Black Klansman's 48 million plus rake that it did domestically, but Black Klansman also is a Spike Lee film, also has all that Oscar word of mouth buzz. Overlord is not Black Klansman,
right.
So... it's going to fall short probably of its production budget.
But Bohemian Rhapsody, playing the hits, $29 million. That's going to be that's going to have some legs.
Crazy. Is that doing enough? Is it helping? Is the box office in this case helping Rami Malek's best actor chances?
It can't hurt. right?
I feel the same, yeah.
It can't hurt. If everybody goes and everybody likes it, it's got a solid cinema score. And yeah, I think Oscar critics might quibble. Sometimes it might be a backlash, but I think his performance, it speaks for itself. It's pretty terrific.
We're on record. We enjoyed it. We don't think it's Darkest Hour Gary Oldman is
Winston Churchill. And to be honest, in my guess, after I see like Christian Bale and some other heavy hitters to come onto the Best Actor front, I'm guessing he's going to get bumped out of my top five. I think he's like sitting around four right now for me.
He's not even close to Bradley Cooper, who's my current number one. Mm-hmm. So, well, and we're going to talk about an Oscar lens in a minute. The leader here, of course, once again, the box office, is The Grinch. The big money it's pulling in, it's going to be kicking up their heels, those that are behind it. A 65 million-ish opening weekend would put it on track. You said 67, so even more. Mm-hmm. Put it on track to likely finish as a $200 million-plus domestic box office rake when all is said and done. $65 million for the opening, by the way, is more than Mission Impossible Fallout, Bohemian Rhapsody, or Ready Player One opened with in 2018, stateside this year, and would also rake in $67 million in the top 10 of highest grossing opening weekends for 2018.
Well, Tina Tierney will be very upset because essentially the Halloween decorations were taken down immediately. Now we have Christmas. And
diving
go back,
in.
Go back to all the horror. Go back to our episode. MMO does all the horror to enjoy who that is, because Movie Geek and Proud, they did a great job.
That has stuck with me too, by the way, because I go to Target so often and I've just seen the Christmas spot in the corner growing. And I just kept thinking, oh, Tina Tierney ain't going to stand for this.
I rarely go to malls anymore, but I went to a mall and I saw a Hallmark store and I laughed. I laughed because of that.
You don't know what you're in for in there. Yes, definitely go check out our All the Horror. Shout out to Movie Geek and Proud. If you have not gone and listened to them, it's definitely worth your time. As well as everyone else that we highlighted in that episode. It's a fun episode. We asked our friends what horror character, what horror movie monster they would be, and what would they be known for. It was a fun time.
That was innovative.
Part of All the Horror stuff. So, moving right along. We have two segments left in this weekly review. This one's called Do You Care?
Basically a preview segment where we're going to ask you if you care about some of these movies coming to theaters, coming to Netflix, et cetera, et cetera. Some long-term stuff, some short-term stuff. Michael, Fantastic Beasts, Instant Family, and Widows all open on 11/16. Do you care about any of those? And why?
I care about Widows. Yeah. Big time, obviously. And I'm still...
You're not going to be a Fantastic Beast. No, the crimes of
Grindelwald. I will not be the first in line. Maybe third in line. Maybe fourth. I might get there a little late.
Now, Instant Family, we gave it a hard time, but we like the filmmakers involved.
Yes.
And we think it's got a chance. I might watch it like when it comes on VOD.
When it comes around to TV land, yeah, sure. I might give it a look, too. I can't imagine I'll go see it.
Fantastic Beast does look like terrific visual effects and cinematography.
Stunning. It looks stunning. We're both suckers for bad guy
I might have a naturegasm, and I might have to go see that.
Yeah,
at some
we're
point.
Both bad guy. We're suckers for bad guy depth. So, but Widows is the highlight, right?
I'm almost scared of Widows at this point because my expectations are so high. I'm like already, like almost, I have a movie list, you all know this by now, in Google Docs, and I have like a spot where I have a space early on. I'm like, that's going to be Widows, right? It's going to be number one or two or three. It's going to be up there. What if it's not, Michael?
Let me ease your concerns. It's going to be the greatest movie of all time.
So I'm in for Widows. I'm excited about it. I'm going to try and like do the roller coaster thing and somehow lowball it so that I like it.
I hope you can. We've seen nothing but glowing reviews from our friends online who have seen it. We can't wait to sink our teeth into it. We've been hyping it since our 2019 Oscars predictions that we did the day after the 2018 Academy Awards. So fingers crossed. I hope it's all it's cracked up to be and more. And it's also why we did 6 Degrees of MMO with the two Steve McQueens. So
absolutely.
It all comes together.
It has to be great.
Mike, At Eternity's Gate also comes out in limited release, but Willem Dafoe's Oscar promise has basically dwindled to nothing. Do you care?
This trailer dialogue is overlord bad. It's bad, and we are worried about this film because of the dialogue in the trailer. On the basis of Sex, another kind of similar situation, on the nose dialogue, we're a little worried about that one coming out later, but I just think this is quacking like a dog right now. In terms of Oscar buzz, you see what I did?
Yeah, you took a little
instead of ducks, you know,
detour
dogs. You know, so yeah, I'm worried. I'm worried about it. I love the look of Willem Dafoe. He's our buddy. We know him from the film festival circuit.
Your BFF,
he's my pal,
Will.
Yeah, he's a really great guy in person, and I don't know. I met him.
Like pushing
half,
that.
Half met him once.
Pushing that narrative.
We shared a glance at a film festival once. Name dropping like an ass.
BFFs. Yes. I don't think I do care, to be honest, about At Eternity's Gate anymore. It just seems like it's lacked all momentum. Yeah. I guess that means I'm very ripe to be surprised by it and overjoyed and pleasantly pleased. So we'll see. But no, not overly looking forward to that one.
So anymore. A side story and an important one here, Michael. Viggo Mortensen uttered the N-word at a Q&A following a screening of Green Book this past weekend. He has since apologized. The full quote is, quote, "in making the point that many people casually use the N-word at the time in which the movie story takes place in 1962, I used the full word. Although my intention was to speak strongly against racism, I have no right to even imagine the hurt that is caused by hearing that word in any context, especially from a white man. I do not use the word in private or in public. I am very sorry that I did use the full word last night, and I will not utter it in public again," end quote. Michael, of course you care.
Yes, obviously.
Where do you land on this story here?
So, a couple things. Viggo, I do buy his apology. That's off the top. I think it was proper for him to do. He's very involved in politics throughout his career, so he's I think he knows that he really did screw up, so I buy that. My shock is that the lack of outrage. I feel like people are just letting it get a pass, and this story's kind of flew under the radar, and I don't understand why. I mean, it's a big deal. There's no reason any white person ever, under any context or circumstance, needs to use this word.
Can we let the word fade into
nothingness?
Absolutely,
please.
Can we let it become a thing of the past and a historical relic, please? I know comedians say it to be edgy or satiric.
And we hate it.
And I just don't think it's necessary. South Park got it right, and before you get mad at me for saying that, basically their message is that white people will just never understand the power and harm of that word, period.
It's
100%. So don't use it. Don't use it ironically. Don't use it. Done.
Yeah, we don't have that word. It's not for white people to use. It should not be for white people to use.
It's a no-brainer.
Get rid of it. I was surprised again, though, at the lack of chastising that Viggo seems to be getting. I haven't seen a lot of critical pieces written about him, or maybe everyone buys his apology, but when you have Megyn Kelly arguing about blackface happening back in the 70s, she loses her job immediately on the Today Show, which I think was proper.
Yeah.
Where's the outrage for Viggo as well?
You wonder if this controversy is going to hurt Green Book's chances, and we could totally understand if it happens.
Yeah, I'm with you. Just get rid of it. It's no reason to ever use that word, ever. Moving on here, Ballad of Buster Scruggs comes on Netflix on the 16th. Mike, I'm not crazy about this one. I'm not crazy about the idea of it. You seem to be a little more excited. We're considering whether or not to do an OSP, an Oscar Sprint profile on it. Michael, do you care?
Yeah, I care. I'm going to watch this when it comes out. It's an Oscar-level movie coming out on Netflix, I think next week on the 16th. It is out in limited release this weekend in theaters. I love the Coen brothers more than I can't watch James Franco getting hung, like, from the neck until dead. So that's where I'm at with it. I can understand your take in the past where you just don't want anything to do with James Franco.
Not a big Franco supporter. Yeah.
I think it's a bunch of vignettes, so Franco might be in a couple short stories. He might show up, but we'll see what it is. We'll see for ourselves.
Yeah, I stand by that. I don't care about this. We'll see what happens. If it gets enough for award consideration, if there's enough momentum, obviously we will review it, and I'll still have my gripe about what I've always had my gripe about, you know, with James Franco's inclusion.
All right, Mike, last do you care here. Deadpool already getting Disney-ified.
Ugh.
And I'm a little worried about this because there's a PG-13 Deadpool 2 being re-released, and I think we should be angry about this, right? Listen to the setup here.
Pitch it to me.
For the price of admission, fans can get a look at the PG-13 version of Deadpool 2. With the violence and language cut to meet MPAA standards for the rating, they'll also get to see 8 scenes between Deadpool and Fred Savage, all of which were shot in one day. The question is whether this is some sort of trial run for Disney to see if they can get away with PG-13 cut of Deadpool and still rake in a shitload of money at the box office. That kind of change would likely upset Deadpool fans, but it's not out of the realm of possibility for the House of Mouse. That is an article on Slash Film by Ethan Anderton, just released on November 9th. It's a terrific article. Go read Slash Film. Go read Ethan Anderton.
Seems like a step back, right? There was all this hedging and hesitation about whether or not they should ever even go through with this R-rated superhero movie. They finally do a couple years ago in Deadpool 1. It's a giant box office and critical success. It borders on a Best Picture nomination back in 2016, 15, whatever it was.
Deadpool is making dick jokes into artistry.
Oh, it's beautiful.
High art.
Yeah.
And hysterical. Can you do that in a PG-13
movie? It takes low-hanging
movie?
Fruit and just throws it 3,000 feet then, up in the air.
And then talks more about low-hanging fruit.
But look, there's a right way to do this, I think, too, right? If you're going to approach Ryan Reynolds in the meta joke way, saying, well, you know, Disney owns us now, so now we have to clean it up. If you want to release two cuts of every Deadpool from now on, a PG-13 one where he's poking fun at it being PG-13, I think that'll play well.
That could play well.
Because Deadpool breaks the fourth wall. He's the comic book character of breaking the fourth wall.
You have to break the fourth wall constantly
right.
to make that work.
So but I think it could work, but it's a lot of extra work.
But then aren't you just telling all the kiddies that go to see this one instead of that one? Basically, you tip off all the dirty jokes at the heart of it. Isn't that worse? Let their imaginations run wild?
If only there was people that could watch over kids and straighten them out in their daily lives to let them know what is and isn't appropriate.
Disney.
Be parents! Come on! That is Do You Care, and we'll end this on the final segment here, the Oscar race update. Quick look at what we have. And A Star Is Born, it's subsiding!
Or not. Just you wait. So I'm going to go over the A Star Is Born numbers we've been talking about. We reviewed it. We got a ton of hits on that episode. So for this Oscar race update, we're going to focus on what all the experts are saying about A Star Is Born.
And who I have to fight.
Award circuit, right now they are very high on it. They say they have it winning Best Picture. They have it winning Best Director, number one in its rankings. They rank like 50 for each one. They have it winning Best Actor, Bradley Cooper for director as well. They have it winning Sam Elliott, first Oscar for Best Supporting Actor.
That's
Michael.
That's the most offensive one.
And they have Lady Gaga at number three right now for Best Actress. It's all over the technical noms right now. It's making a ton of ground with award circuit. We love those guys. We think a lot of their operation there at awardcircuit.com, the predictions, the Oscar hub there.
Yeah.
They do a great job, like I said. So a little worried if you're Mike number one right now.
I stand by my faith.
You think it's going to subside
by my faith.
A little bit.
This is not, it can't sweep. It can't. What number would I be happy with as far as the big five or big six awards if it wins? I can give it Best Actor. If it wins Best Picture, I'll deal. That's it. And I think it's a huge success, right?
Right.
Having one movie win two of the big five awards.
To me, it feels like a Best Picture, doesn't it?
It's currently not my number one, but right. I can see why other people, sure.
To me, it's like doing all the things that The Shape of Water did last year, you know,
which
plays to so many communities that are wonderful communities, and they are involved, deeply involved in the movie. And then, of course, there's a couple white people at the center of it.
It's the exact same narrative of The Shape of Water, too. It's a movie and a trope and a story we've seen a billion times already that was just kind of updated and not really perfected.
To me, there's off notes in that screenplay. There's
that second
off notes
hour,
in that
man.
Movie. Yeah, the second hour is tough to grapple with in a little bit at times. I just think the movie is kind of colored by numbers at times as well.
But I agree.
For me, it is a Best Picture contender. Out of the group, it's probably going to contend.
Oh,
I have other movies
up
there.
Without question. I have no gripe with it
and
getting a nomination.
I think that Best Actor, he's going to contend, like you said.
He's my number one.
Here's a silver lining for Mike 1 here. So your sanity is on the
is that a Bradley Cooper
it's on
pun?
The edge of a knife, but here we go. 17 out of 30 Gold Derby experts have it winning Best Picture, so it is the favorite there.
Yeah, and that's up from the 14 that it was two weeks ago. So three people have converted. That's not good for me.
That's not good for you. Only five experts have Cooper winning Best Director, though.
Good.
Cuaron is the heavy favorite for Roma.
It has
here.
Been for months already.
And I don't think that's going away.
I
he's
don't
think
won so
best directors a couple times now,
yeah,
right?
He's on the verge of something huge here.
14 experts, and then there's like 26 slots. 14 have Gaga winning Best Actress.
That I wouldn't even care so much if.
That's up, though.
Okay. Toni Collette is only in two top fives. On Gold Derby right
that
now from Hereditary. Toni Collette and Glenn Close to me are so head and shoulders above the field right now.
Are they
now.
Afraid of watching that horror movie, or does that horror movie just turn them off?
I don't know.
It has to.
I'm outraged by it.
It's
get
be the
Toni Collette
bias.
An Oscar. Hashtag get Toni Collette an Oscar.
Our number one.
Unbelievably worthy.
She's our number one right now, right? Isn't she
It
yours?
Transcends the entire genre of horror.
Great performance. All-timer. 14 have Bradley Cooper winning Best Actor at Gold Derby.
No gripe.
We're in with that one. And only two now have Sam Elliott winning Best Supporting
Actor. This is the most egregious one. I don't see it from Sam Elliott in here. He's playing Sam Elliott.
We got some major nominees headed for that Best Supporting Actor race. We got Mahershala Ali. We got Timothy Chalamet in the year he just had. And he's great and beautiful.
And I cannot imagine the Sam Elliott, A Star Is Born performance matches up with either of those. No. We haven't seen it yet. We're going to do Oscar Sprint profiles when we do. But I will be shocked if we're saying that it's on the same level as Sam Elliott and A Star Is Born. I apologize. I love Sam Elliott. He's a fantastic actor. But come on, he wasn't doing anything huge.
Chalamet's already well above him for me right now. I saw Beautiful
Boy. And you have seen it, yeah.
Yeah, it's way well above him. We're going to see Green Book next week or a week and a half from now. Just from the trailer alone, I mean, Mahershala Ali's going off.
Yeah, I totally, 1,000% agree. I don't see how it's close.
No way. I mean, Sam.
But I don't see how Lady Gaga and Tony Collette are close.
Sam Elliott almost cries and cries talks a few times. There's a few good scenes in there.
I think we're just, there's
as
this
As Mike
prevailing...
is almost doing that to me, thinking about the Stars Board sweeping all these awards.
Well, there's this prevailing feeling, I feel like, that they're desperate to crown these people that are just close, that haven't gotten their moment yet. Like Willem Dafoe. Oh, he's definitely winning Supporting Actor last year. And now he's definitely winning Actor this year. And both times it's like, not really. I think there's just people are desperate to give people longtime actors their day.
Yeah, it's a wave of momentum. There's no and it's a good narrative for Sam Elliott.
Yeah, it is,
and he's had a great career. There's no question.
Yes, he's a great actor.
This is not the role of his career, I don't think either. So next Best Picture, Matt Negley and friends over there, they have A Star Is Born in the Best Picture category. 5 out of 10 number ones. Of course, it's in their top five.
I'll see you all in court.
Best Director, 3 out of 10 number ones. Again. Roma's Alfonso Cuarón is up there for them as well. Best Actor, 10 out of 10 number ones.
He had the highest bar to cross with that performance. He had the most to prove, and he knocked it out of the park.
Everybody at Next Best Picture loving Bradley Cooper's Best Actor performance. Best Actress, I was fascinated by this one. 6 out of 10 love Lady Gaga. Number one right now for them.
It's easily the third best performance at Best right now. Easily. Before Viola Davis. You know, like, it's no.
I agree. I agree to disagree with other people. I agree.
Put her in supporting actress.
I think she's a lead actress.
Would you quibble if to get the Oscar they put her in supporting? They're not going to. It's already been done. But would you quibble if they positioned her as a supporting actress to get her the Oscar? Which I thought was what they were going to do from the jump. But and I also thought they were going to go for the comedy or musical spot at Golden Globes, which they're not
doing. She's as much of a supporting actress as Timothy Chalamet is a supporting actor. I would say that.
Or Viola Davis in Fences?
Or as Sam, absolutely Viola Davis in Fences. So, Sam Rockwell in Three Billboards Outside of Missouri.
There's a precedent for
it. So you're right.
Yeah.
None of them should be best supporting anything, exactly. In my mind. But that's where I'm at. So Best Supporting Actor, 3 out of 10 number ones for Sam Elliott.
Get out.
Next Best Picture. Of course, Feinberg has all these as front runners. Scott Feinberg, Hollywood Reporter, but he doesn't necessarily rank them yet. Well, we're waiting for that Feinberg forecast, the new one. So we're on pins and needles for that.
Yeah, it was a Star Is Born centric Oscar race update, but we're going to probably include this most week MMO weekly episodes we do, because we, you know, sometimes we'll give you updates about our top fives, our different categories. We'll focus on a different movie. We're going to do a lot of stuff
and
with it.
Of course, nominations coming out, awards coming out, precursors. We'll be able to hit on them on a weekly basis.
So it's a very important staple of this MMO weekly. And we thank you for riding along with us in this soft debut episode, we'll call it.
This is fun. Yeah.
Yeah, this is not
a platform release.
It's a soft release.
We're opening New York and LA. With MMO.
Except we haven't done post yet. We haven't gone all the way through post-production. So you're getting the raw footage of this episode as opposed to what hopefully will be next time, and we're going to put bells and whistles on it. We want to know your thoughts, desperately want to know your thoughts about this format, also this release date, and what you think we can do better to help support or please you. We can get at us all our social media, Mike and Oscar on Facebook, Mike and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on the Twitter machine, Mike and Oscar at gmail.com, and on Reddit. You can reach us anywhere that you listen to podcasts right now. Again, please think about donating to the help fires that are going on in California right now, and the people that need it and need the help. And again, if there's anything that we can do would be of service, we would love to help in any way we can. You're in our hearts and in our hopes. Mike, on this MMO Weekly soft debut,
of course, donate. But it's also wise for you because we're going to have fun with Six Degrees at a sooner date. Now, we're going to do a Six Degrees next Sunday or Monday whenever we do the MMO Weekly next week. So challenge number five, Steve McQueen to Steve McQueen. And if you think you just won based on the challenge, you're wrong. They're two different guys. What? Trick question. That'd be a funny response if I didn't say it. If I wasn't such a comic genius
people
here today.
People just give us gifts of one year Steve McQueen. That's their answer.
So get those to us sooner than later. Send us to it on Twitter. You said all the social media contacts, Facebook or Instagram. We're the most active on those. We'll see those the fastest. Use our Gmail, MikeMikeAndOscar@gmail.com, and let us know what your responses are. We'll read the winners on the air. If you send us honorable mentions, we'll read those as well.
MMO Weekly, guys. Thanks for riding along, and we'll see you next time. Get ready for the week.
See ya.